Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Y el partido que empieza, los jugadores lo presienten, empieza a acercarse tanto, tanto, que ahora ya no hay tiempo para las sensaciones, solo hay tiempo para las acciones.
Video blogging is sort of the next level.
Many of those blogs are posted on YouTube. The website launched a year ago, and it quickly became one of the internet's most popular sites.
Dice que se que hubo falta con Carly. Atención, que en ese tipo de jugada las fuerzas iguala. Mira el primer palo. Gamble gol.
America has tonight, for the first time in over a quarter of a century, signaled it's ready for direct talks with Iran. This major shift in US policy comes as international tension grows over Iran's nuclear enrichment program and fears it may be preparing to build a nuclear weapon.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And today on the pod, our guest is Gavin Ramjwan, BBC Sport presenter and host of the Manzilla podcast. Pleasure to have you with us, Gavin.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Today we go back to the Champions League final in 2006. Barcelona beat Arsenal 2-1. Gavin, why have you chosen this game?
Oh, well, this game, for me, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, and it was the biggest game, I think, of Arsenal's history. Champions League
it's
final.
It's a big shout straight away.
Oh, I think it is. It's a huge shout. But when you look at it, you know, the leagues were won. They'd achieved that. It was the Invincibles had been done. This was the time to cap it all off. Mm. This was the game to effectively seal Wenger's, you know, legacy, if you like. It was a massive game. I remember being so up for it, being so up for it. It was, you know, previous years with European their European record, they hadn't quite got to the level where I think a lot of people expected them to be at.
Yeah.
And this was the first time where I think people thought maybe they can actually do this. And it was a mighty Barcelona team, an incredible side, Ronaldinho in the team. Mm. Ludovic Juli up front. It was a really, really exciting team. And it was very strong at the back as well. Marquez and Puyol were at the back.
Mm.
I think Arsenal fans believed at that point that this was the year they could actually do it. And the way they started the game was incredible as well.
Mm.
It was absolutely incredible. But for me, like, it was, you know, I remember watching the game in a sports cafe in central London. Mm. I won't give them a shout. In fact, they don't exist anymore. The place is closed down. It was in Haymarket in Piccadilly.
Oh, yeah, I know it. It's closed down,
well,
is it?
Well, it hasn't closed down. It's something else now. It's not what it used to be. It used to be called the Sports Cafe.
That's right.
And it was like, you know, it was like the sort of definitive sports watching venue in central London.
Yeah, that you couldn't see wall space for the amount TVs. Of screens and
yeah. Every table had a little TV set into the wall beside it. Yeah,
they really, really wanted you to watch sport in that place. And fair enough, that's what it was called, the Sports Cafe.
This is it. Yeah, it knew exactly what it was. The branding was on point. So they had that nailed down. And I just remember all my mates who were there. It was all my university friends because I think I'd just started doing children's BBC at the time.
Right.
So I was doing a show called News Round and a Sports Round as well. And I remember it was my first year doing it, and I thought, wow, what a year this could cap off.
Yeah.
First year of, you know, being on TV as a presenter, you know, reporting on sport, and then Arsenal go and win the Champions League. That would be incredible. But I remember watching it, and I remember just sort of going, the emotions for it were, you know, it was excitement, it was build up, it was just one of those games where you thought, actually, we've got a chance here. Mm. We've got a chance here. The optimism was there. And then you watch the game, and I think as a neutral, if you're watching the game, there were a lot of neutrals watching it in the venue where we were at. It was just thrilling. It was a really exciting match. Mm. And I just remember it being a game for me. And I know we didn't win, but it just stood out for me as, you know, one of those games where you're just so up for it.
Yeah.
And it just sticks with you. And, you know, yeah, the result isn't the greatest in terms of what we would have liked at the end of the day. But for me, I'll always remember that because I just thought that was our biggest chance of glory. It didn't work out, but it was an exciting team. And I hope one day we get there again.
Yeah, but it made you dream.
It did, yeah, that's it. It made you dream.
And I think, yeah, for a team that makes you dream, you know, you may remember them fondly. But, I mean, Jonathan, going into the game, Gavin talks about biggest game in Arsenal's history and
yeah, I'd go 1930 FA Cup final, but, you know. I think what is... Yeah, I take his point. I take your point in that, they're only Champions League final. But also the team was in an interesting phase of its development that... Mm. They had the invincible season, and then we did the podcast with Vish Andaraja on the defeat to Liverpool,
the
Neil Mellor goal, I can't remember, was it the October of that season?
It wasn't that far into the season, but that ended the.
And sort of already the obituaries were there for that Arsenal team. It was, I think, their second defeat. Maybe it might have been the October, November time.
It
anyway.
Didn't end it because I think Manchester United ended it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it sort of it was the obituary for sort of that side.
It was, yes, that's right. Was it Kevin McCarron?
Right. You know, his match report was incredibly sort of they're going to have to rebuild, and this really was that process of they won the FA Cup in 2005, an awful final.
It was a robbery.
But a final. Well, they got the goalless draw against United and sort of it was as though Wenger had learned a new trick. He'd learned how to defend. And you look at the knockout games in this tournament and you look at the scores. 1-0, 0-0, 2-0, 0-0, 1-0, 0-0. And I think particularly the two games against Real Madrid in the last 16, the defending in those games was incredible. And to win, they won the game in the Bernabeu, didn't they? They won 1-0
away.
Lovely
Henry goal.
1-0, yeah.
And then got the 0-0 at home.
And Juventus as well.
Juventus, I mean, it's a slightly more sort of classical way of doing it, win 2-0 at home and keep it tight away.
But still, they could do that.
But they had the capacity to keep clean sheets against really good teams. I mean, they hadn't let in a goal in six knockout games.
Well, younger Arsenal fans will be thinking, what?
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal's been so sloppy defensively for so long now.
I mean, I remember having a long chat we must have been on a train or something, a long chat with Garth Crooks. After the Real Madrid game, and him being, this is a new team. This is better than Invincibles, better than 98 team because they can defend. Although I guess that 98 team, they had that when Manninger came inside, that great run of clean sheets. But based on the old defence, based on the George Graham defence, whereas this was Wenger's defence of Campbell and Touré and Aboué and Cole.
Yeah,
it's a great back four.
And Lehmann a great goalkeeper as well.
Well, and it's odd because Lehmann. As we'll talk about in the second half of the actual game.
And Gilberto as well.
Gilberto Marshall.
Was protecting that back four.
Yeah, your mate Gilberto,
Big Gil.
I had dinner with Gilberto about 3 weeks ago.
Lovely.
Can you match? The Confederations Cup.
Can you match that, Jonathan?
it was the most surreal event, the most surreal circumstance ever.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going off point here.
No, it's fine.
He was doing the Confederations Cup with Habib and, it was, spilled in the studio next door to us. we sat down. I'm just there on a late shift. Going to get a bit to eat in the kitchen, and I see a guy with his back to me having a bit of takeaway food. And I'm thinking to myself, he looks a bit like Gilberto Silva, and it turns out it is Gilberto Silva just casually eating his dinner in our little communal area. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Is it up in Salford?
In Salford, yeah. Yeah.
Well, weirdly, bizarre. I have also eaten Nando's with Gilberto Silva in Salford.
They are. feel incredibly left out, to be perfectly honest with you, because I've only had Nando's with Emerson. You know, so, I'm amazed that they're not next to each other the whole time, you know, with a rope.
Sorry, Jonathan, just got sidetracked on your point.
No, no, it's fine.
But it was an incredible back four, or back six, if you like, if you include the goalkeeper and Gilberto Silva, despite the fact that Eboué would be seen, obviously he's off the field, was a bit of a joker and so on, but would become seen, he would be seen going forward as a quite an erratic kind of defender and layman, of course, that type of goalkeeper. But for that season, certainly in the Champions League, they were airtight. They only conceded two goals before that final, which is a phenomenal record considering some of the opponents they played. Yeah, you mentioned Real Madrid, Juventus.
You can look at the Villarreal game, the semi-final, and it required Riquelme to miss a penalty, but still.
We still got a save. I mean, Mourinho's Chelsea, when they went on that amazing run, you know, Cech saved a penalty, Dickhoff against Blackburn, you know. Your goalkeeper's a part of your side, you know. And Gavin is a goalkeeper by trade, by the way. Exactly. So mind how you go about the goalkeeper's union here.
I mean, that Riquelme penalty, which Arsenal would still have gone
through. It would have tied it.
It would have been 1-1 on aggregate, so it would have gone to extra time.
Extra time,
yeah. I just remember the direction on that is incredible. It's like a spaghetti western. It's kind of a camera, Riquelme's face, Lehmann's face, Riquelme's face a bit tighter, Lehmann's face a bit tighter, down to just Riquelme's eyes, at which you see a little flicker of panic. Oh, he's missed this.
He's blinked.
Yeah.
And sure enough.
To be fair, of all the keepers you'd want in that situation, if it does go down to that kind of, you know, western shootout, Lehmann might be your man.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Yeah, yeah.
A tough
man to never flinch. Yeah. Really, I think he really had nerves of steel. A little bit hot-headed, as we saw in the final, but I think as a presence, you know, it had been a long time since we had a goalkeeper like Lehmann. I really loved Lehmann. Mm. I thought he was, you know, for me,
a real character.
Oh, real character. But there was just no messing around with him, you know. You'd see players that would, you know, try and tussle with him on corners and stuff, and he'd just throw them in the back of the net. I think, sure, he got sent off a couple of times for doing that, but...
Him and Drogba often had it was rather, well, pathetic would be the word I'd use. But Lehmann, I remember that summer, actually, in 2006, he would have been Germany's goalkeeper during the World Cup, and saving at least one, maybe two penalties against Argentina in the quarterfinal. And they said to him that, you know, they had written down on pieces of paper where the taker, you know...
Well,
he
had a piece of paper in his sock.
Yes, that's right.
But it was he'd torn it off a hotel notepad.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the bit of paper, I can't remember the exact details, but something like of the five or four Argentinians who took penalties, like only one was actually on his bit of paper, but he kept consulting it.
Yeah, just to
he
get
knew
in the
it was getting in their head.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But I think one of the coaches said to Lehmann, they, you know, they'd written all this down and made these plans, but the line was, they said to him, but if you can't remember, then just save two and we'll be okay. And I love the thought of... Just so what, if he's saved two, does he just stand aside? You know, if you do that, then we'll be, and of course they were, which shows you the sort of the character. But back into the Champions League, you know, Arsenal, they were in a group with Ajax, Sparta Prague and FC Thun. They won 5 and drew 1, sort of breezed through the group, much like Barcelona did as well. But this Barcelona side, and Jonathan, we in this podcast, maybe we'll delve into it another time, I don't know, but we get to talk about one of our favourite subjects in football, the curious career of Frank Rijkaard.
Well, I mean, not a lot of people know that kind of the working title for this originally was Frank Lampard's lingerie shop.
Frank Rijkaard.
What did I say? Frank Lampard. Yeah. And we abandoned that because Frank Lampard has never, to our knowledge, owned a lingerie shop. Rijkaard, however.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, his you know, he retired from football and opened a lingerie shop.
Yeah.
And then
became, I didn't know that.
He became Netherlands national manager, a very natural sort of progression.
Yeah, off the back of that. We like your style, my friend.
Management is management. You know, he knew football. He showed he could balance the books.
Lingerie. Yeah. He said balance the books. Any previous experience of managing people? Well, no way.
And then, you know, Netherlands at home in 2000, going out in, I'm sure we'll do that semi-final against Italy because that is one of the most incredible games.
We did the final of
We did the final, but extraordinary 0-0 draw, penalties missed all over the place.
Yeah. They should have gone through.
That was sort of a sort of par performance at best. Mm. He then takes Sparta Rotterdam to the first relegation in their history.
Yeah.
And then he's accepted a job to be manager of the Netherlands Antilles.
Yeah.
When first Gus Hiddink and then Ronald Koeman turned down the Barcelona job. And Koeman, I mean, we keep saying Koeman will be Barcelona manager at some point. Right. I'm sure he will be.
Yeah.
But he keeps being asked when the time's completely wrong. So he was manager of Ajax at the time, like, you know, a ridiculous Ajax team with Mido and Zlatan.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Van der Meijden and Van der Vaart and Pienaar and Galaschek and Maxwell.
Schneider was there.
Schneider, was there, yeah. You know, a brilliant, brilliant Ajax.
Van der Sar then as well.
He may have gone by then.
Yeah. But it was a great side, nonetheless.
Yeah. So you can see why he didn't want to leave that team. They'd beaten Arsenal in the Champions League in 03, 04, hadn't they, I think?
I think so, yeah.
In the group stage, maybe.
In the groups, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And so you can see why Koeman didn't want to leave that team. And so third choice Frank gets the call as he's about to go out to you know, Aruba or wherever Netherlands Antilles are based. And I'll do the Barca job.
I'd love to have heard that phone call between him and the Netherlands Antilles. Yeah. There's been a change of plan. Yeah. I've been given the Barcelona job. He doesn't fancy it anymore. He's made up this ridiculous story. And then, of course, but there he was.
And yeah, he actually did an incredibly good job. It's very easy with the Guardiola hindsight to think that, yeah, he was a bit of a stand-in, but
no.
He took over club as in a complete mess.
They
had the two spells of Van Gaal. They'd had the spell of Serra Ferrer. They'd had Radiantich's interim period.
They'd finished sixth.
They finished sixth. Mm.
Yeah. Not that. It was 02, 03. They finished sixth. Which, if I manage Barcelona, I'd get them in the top five. Do you know what I mean? It's really, because a third place finish is a disaster for Barcelona.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Sixth place.
I think they got beaten by Celtic in one of the, maybe the year after that.
Yeah, they did in 04, 05.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't a great time. But Rijkaard got them going. In fact, actually, one of the things that Guardiola was praised for coming in was being a bit of a disciplinarian. So getting rid of some of the party boys eventually, like Ronaldinho and Deco and so on. But actually, Rijkaard did that when he first joined.
So he turned, his first half season is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
I think at Christmas they were seventh or something.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
And then they bring in Edgar Davids in the January, and also they change shape to 4-3-3, which allows Ronaldinho to go back to his old position on the left, cutting infield, where Van Gaal wanted to play him, and Ronaldinho decided he wanted to play as number 10, and that was one of the reasons that relationship went wrong. And then they pick up that season, and if they won on the final weekend, they'd have won the title, and they end up losing it by 2 points to Rafa's Valencia.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
And then they win the title in 04-05, but as you say, go out to Celtic. And then 05-06, they're absolutely at their peak, that they win the league again, playing great football.
Yeah. It was a glorious side,
that.
I
spoke to Eusebio Sacristán, who was in that side. Or was he on the coaching staff? Anyway, he was around that side. And you know, I said to him, was it Rijkaard's idea to switch to a 4-3-3? And he was sort of, he certainly allowed us to do that. And the implication was it was Cruyff who told him to go to 4-3-3.
Is that right?
And that was an amazing thing, because Rijkaard and Cruyff had fallen out massively in 87 when Rijkaard had left Ajax.
Yeah,
I mean, imagine two Dutchmen falling out
in the arena of football.
But Cruyff accept him as being, you know, he's one of the true believers. He's one of the kind of carriers of a total football torch. We will accept him back.
Okay, well, that's very good of him too. My goodness. All right, well, let's have a quick break then, chaps, and then after which we'll talk about the game itself.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mm-hmm.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Larsson, que puede apoyarse en Juli, que balón acaba de meter para allá. Valenti, Valenti, ¡gol! ¡Gol del Barcelona!
Muy bien Larsson, muy bien Larsson.
Acaba de marcar el Barcelona el 2-1.
Welcome back to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. Now, the final was played in Paris, at the Saint-Denis, of course. Barcelona, in their fifth final, having only won it once in 1992 under Cruyff, again, because of their recent successes, one can forget that they don't have the history in the competition like Real Madrid, for example.
Yeah, a big team, but not a successful team until the last sort of 15 years or so.
Exactly, yeah. Arsenal in their first final of the competition, and the first London club to feature in the Champions League final as well, which is a surprising statistic, considering we've seen one or two now since then. But yes, I mean, Arsenal looking impressive defensively going into the final. I'd completely forgotten that Messi missed the final due to injury, because he'd played that season.
Yeah,
I thought he was blooded in a little bit later, but he wasn't in the side.
And the optimism was there. I think we thought that Messi being out, mm-hmm.
Because he was making a bit of a splash at the time.
Oh, he was, yeah. And you know, you look at some of the players in that side. You know, Van Bronckhorst, I think, was left back.
Mm-hmm.
Van Bommel in the middle. In the goalkeeper Valdez. You would have thought, you know, people like Henri going forward against people like some of those guys at the back.
Well, even Oleguer, right back.
Yeah,
he's fondly remembered by Barca fans because he was so much one of them rather than because he was a great player.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was sort of, you know, I don't want to say he was the token local lad, but I don't think he'd have been that tired had he not been a local lad, put it that way.
Well, him playing right back and Henri liking to cut in from the left.
Yeah,
you would have looked at that and thought,
actually, yeah.
Yeah, we might fancy a bit of that. I mean, the front three for Barcelona, Ludovic Juli, who scored the only goal in their semi-final against Milan. And a nice goal it was. You know, obviously Eto'o through the middle and Ronaldinho. I mean, Eto'o was a phenomenal player. I think, would you say he was maybe underappreciated or underrated?
Yeah, I really would.
Yeah.
I
think he was appreciated quite highly, but I think he's better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's one of the most outstanding centre forwards I've ever seen.
Yeah. Because he would press from the front. I mean, you can see in that first season with Guardiola, when it was him, would it have been Messi and... Henri, of course, it was up front. Eto'o's pressing, he would demand it from other players.
He had everything. So he was a great natural, you know, orthodox centre forward. He made the runs and he scored the goals and he was decent in the air.
But a great engine.
But he pressed. But he also had the intelligence and the humility, which is not a word many Cameroonians would use about him, to drop off and move to the right when Messi went to play as a false nine. He was adaptable enough to play anywhere across that front three.
Well, Mourinho got him to do that for Inter.
Mm,
yeah. Yeah, he did, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine being, you know, Samuel Eto'o having won the Champions League a couple of times, largely playing through the middle. Yes, under Guardiola, he'd sort of switched over a bit at times. And then Mourinho says, I want you to do, who would it have been, Milito's doggy work on the wing.
Yeah.
He would have been in a...
Well, that intelligence.
Yeah.
Ian Hawkey, he's done this podcast a couple of times. Mm. I went with him, we were in Cairo in 2006, went with him up to the Cameroon Hotel to try and get any Cameroon player. And we managed eventually to get him to let us speak to Eto'o. Eto'o was in his room.
Yeah.
And we suddenly told, no, only one of you can go. So Ian went. And obviously I was going to get the quotes off him.
You finished your pint.
So Ian goes in the room. Neto's lying there, seemingly naked in bed with a sheet pulled over him, watching a game on the telly. Mm. And Ian says to him, what game are you watching? And Neto's like, I don't know, some rubbish Arab League game, I don't know. So Ian said, well, why are you watching? And he went, well, because what you have to understand is when you play against bad defences, the runs you make are different to the runs you make against good defences. So I'm learning where the space is against these bad defences.
All right. What a scholar of the game.
Yeah, but what a smart thing to think. Yeah, it's true. Of course, a bad defender will leave space in a different place to a good defender.
Yeah. Well, an amateur will sometimes stitch up a professional, Jonathan, as David Brent once said. But that's incredible. I think Eto'o's intelligence on is often underplayed, actually.
So quick as well.
Fantastic
rapid footballer.
Phenomenal. Well, yeah. So the game begins. I mean, Arsenal, it's sort of, I suppose, it's sort of a 4-4-1-1, you would say. I mean, a very young Cesc Fabregas in the midfield.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, until he went to Chelsea, was really, really cherished by Arsenal fans.
He was really loved. He was the heartbeat of the side, actually, you could argue. I think he really ran things, really controlled the tempo. Again, a guy with great vision, used to bring in the players quite well. But I think the Ljungberg position was very interesting in that, in the formation. Mm. When Ljungberg was sort of like playing off Henry, I think, just behind. And that, I think, for the first 180 seconds, first 3 minutes, that, you know, we had two great chances. Valdez pulled off good saves.
Yeah.
I mean, Arsenal started
phenomenally. Yeah. Phenomenally.
Well, it's quite difficult to mark because Henry's not your archetypal centre forward. Mm. He's going around. Freddie Ljungberg, again, drifting around that sort of partnership they had.
Yeah.
And Pires playing off a right.
Yeah, another attack. And Kleb as well, who was another attacking player. Exactly. It is actually quite difficult to kind of think who's going to mark.
Plus, Fabregas' capacity to make late runs. Mm. So, it's a very, we talked about how solid the back six were. Well, the front five was correspondingly very fluid.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Arsenal, as you say, Henry has a chance, which if he would probably want to do better with that, really. I mean, Valdez makes a good save.
You're talking about the one from a Touré cross.
Yeah, when he takes a touch away from the defenders.
And Valdez smothers it really well. But there was a sense starting to build already at this time that Henry didn't really do it in the biggest games.
No,
And I sort of, I remember sort of as that happened thinking, touch is a bit heavy in a big game again.
But do you not think, though, with that goal at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid, the only goal of the tie, I know that was a few rounds previously, but it was a big goal that settled that
tie.
Oh,
shit. I think the idea was nonsense.
Okay.
But it was a thing that people said.
Oh, okay.
I think most of these stats people come out with that, he's played in six finals and he hasn't scored in any of them, whereas he scores 0.8 goals per game throughout. Yeah, but finals, you're playing really good teams. You're not playing kind of Bournemouth or Watford or Charlton who you can rack up hat-tricks against. You're playing Barcelona.
Yeah, by definition.
Obviously it's harder.
He had another shot which Valdez saved as well. But you're right, Gavin. I mean, you watching that game with your mates, you must have thought, hang on a bleeding minute.
We're on. You would have thought that this was the start of, an absolute onslaught, potentially, getting one or two in the first half hour, at least, the way it was going. You were really optimistic.
Especially that second Henry chance, because it's just a corner that's played back. He takes the corner, it's played back to him, and then they let him create the chance for himself. And you start to think, he's on one of those days where he's unplayable. They don't know how to stop him.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then it goes wrong.
And it does. I mean, Samuel Eto'o is slipped through. To get through that Arsenal defence and create a chance shows the craft.
It was one hell of a ball through.
It was a lovely ball through. Mm. And Lehmann comes rushing out. You can see why, but Eto'o just skips past him. And the free kick on the edge of the box is given. Lehmann is sent off. I mean, I think it was Julie himself, actually, who slid the ball into the empty net. And I remember when that happened, because I suddenly just got caught up in it. And I mean, my brother's an Arsenal fan, he was actually at the game, and I tend to support the English team or the British team when they're in European competition, and I did want Arsenal to win, and I just remember feeling gutted, absolutely gutted when the ref sent him off. But of course he was going to send him off, the rules were the rules, certainly back then.
Well, it was a free kick, so it would be a red under the modern law. It's a red card.
It's a complete red card. But I did wonder, like, could they have let Barcelona score? I think probably the neutral, certainly, Well, I think probably everybody concerned, actually.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, there's also then a kind of a question of which do you prefer? Would you rather go 1-0 down, have 11 men, or would you rather keep it 0-0 with 10? And certainly
with
at half-time, I think Arsenal were relatively happy with the way it was going.
Yeah. But how did you feel, though? When Lehmann got sent off, did you think,
I thought I was gutted. You know, I thought, you know, you keep getting sent off, that's kind of going to automatically hamstring you, isn't it? You know, you take Pires off and bring Almunia on. You know, that's a big attacking threat gone.
And having looked so good, the momentum is completely,
seemingly.
Kind of
went to, you would think, oh gosh, you know, all this great work we've been doing, you know, is it all just going to come to an end right now, here and then? But I think, you know, it's a good question. Would it have been better with 11 men on the field and being 1-0 down, or you know, taking the 10 men and having the free kick go wide after? I think it was Ronaldinho.
Yeah, he did it wide.
I mean, you know, you still live in hope. You still live in hope with the back four that you've got that, you know, has been doing incredible work that season. You still live in hope, but I think that it was really, really deflating. It was really deflating, especially when it's Lehmann as well, who's done so well in the run-up to the final. He's, you know, the penalty save against Riquelme and against Villarreal. And I think that I was really deflated. I remember it being just crushing.
Yeah.
But again, the hope is still there. Well, still 0-0.
And it was rightly there, because not that long after that, you know, Aboué runs down the right wing and clearly dives to win a free kick. VAR wouldn't be having any of that nowadays.
It's a stereotype against Puyol, isn't it? He's one of those players that, you know, you go in for an innocuous challenge with him, and it looks like he's fouled you because of his big hair and the way he is, quite gangly. And
I understand why the referee gave it, don't get me wrong.
Ugly player.
Yeah.
Not ugly personality, but ugly player.
Sure. One of the lovely personalities. Yeah. Okay, Gavin. And then Henri takes the free kick, flights it in. And one of the most glorious sights in the history of football is when Sol Campbell rises for a header and nods it into the back of the net. And it was incredible.
Well, it felt like redemption for 98.
Yes.
So for Campbell.
Yeah.
When he'd scored the goal that was ruled out against Argentina.
Yeah.
Also a free kick against 10 men.
Yeah.
And you sort of thought, well, you know, he probably... I mean, I think in 98 it was correctly ruled out, you know, the arm across the face.
Annoyingly so, yeah.
But from Campbell's point of view... Yeah, he thought he'd scored for 10 men against 11.
Yeah.
And 8 years later, he does.
That's right, yeah. I mean, he'd scored in the opening game, England's opening game of World Cup 2002, their header against Sweden, which was another one of those towering sort of Campbell headers. And I remember Barry Davis's commentary when the ball comes in, free header, bang! You know, which is what we want. But Arsenal went 1-0 up, and that hope you speak of, Gavin, you know, suddenly it's like, oh, bloody hell, hang on, there's something happening here.
This is it. It's like you rebound off the back of that and you think, actually, maybe this could still happen. Maybe we could actually go on and do this, you know, because the play has been there still. You know, the free kick was, it was a nice free kick from Henri, and the header was just, it was galvanising, actually. You know, you go into half time with that and you think to yourself, hang on a minute, we can actually do this.
Well, and Eto hits the post before half time.
Yeah, that's right.
You start to think,
well, that was a great save from
Almunia,
actually. That was a brilliant save.
But did he touch it onto the post?
I'm pretty sure he got a touch onto that.
Yeah, goalkeeper's union. That's the official line.
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, it was only like a real slight touch, but it made all the difference because it hit the post. It would have gone in otherwise. So,
well, they're going at half time at 1-0.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, hang on a minute here. And of course, the second half starts, and obviously Barcelona have got a lot of the ball. But knowing how good that Arsenal defence was and not conceding many chances, but Barcelona looked like pretty frustrated.
Well, and also you look at that Arsenal team, and Ljungberg and Henri are two of the fastest players we've seen in the last 20 years. So on the break, they can definitely threaten.
I mean, they had chances.
Ljungberg had a chance that Valdez tipped over.
And that that Henri chance.
Yeah,
I mean,
good that could save that.
That Henri chance at 1-0.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I tell you what, Gavin, I don't know. I can guess how you feel about that.
Yeah.
I'm not an Arsenal fan. And when I look back at that, it makes me feel a little bit gutted. Do you know what I mean? It sort of almost like haunts me as a kind of not neutral, as an Englishman watching it. And I remember when he missed that chance, that's when I thought, it's one of those moments where you think, oh, actually, hang on a minute here. See, if he puts that away, then I think that's probably game over. It's easy to say behind side, of course. Yeah.
But it's one of those where pretty much any other circumstance you'd back him to score.
Yeah.
He's clean through, he's in loads of space.
Yeah.
Maybe too much time to think about it. Maybe.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, yeah, because it was a fairly straightforward set. Valdez sort of read it quite well. He hits it down to Valdez's right and, you know, fairly comfortably catches the ball. And I think maybe that was a wake-up call for Barcelona, or not that they needed a wake-up call, but they were getting frustrated because prior to that, Ronaldinho was trying to do it all himself. And there's moments where he's hitting a shot wide and you can hear the Arsenal fans going, "Whee!"
I remember that. The one that he absolutely put like 7-8 yards, more than that probably, like 10, 15 yards wide.
Yeah. So the way this game is panning out, you think to yourself, oh my goodness, are they going to do the unthinkable here?
Well, and there is a sense in which Ronaldinho, for all his quality, is the last player you want in a game like this when things are slipping away from you, and because he is exactly the sort of bloke who'll start trying to do everything himself.
Yeah, and it was playing into Arsenal's hands.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then Frank Rijkaard brought on Henrik Larsson.
Yeah,
which was a genius move, as it would turn out. And I think that showed Rijkaard's sort of tactical capability, the way he kind of slightly switched it up. And Larsson, a player who had been at Celtic for so many years and one of the best players in the history of Scottish football, of course, but he'd played at Celtic for so many years and been absolutely phenomenal for them. Personally, you know, having seen him play in Scotland for so long, I was so glad for him to have to get a bit of recognition at the top level in the European game, because he was such a phenomenal forward. To come on in a game like that and to change it. Okay, he didn't score, but he got two assists.
But it was such a ridiculous side Barca had out when he came on.
Well, yeah.
Because they brought on Belletti for Olaguer. They brought on Iniesta for Ed Milson at half-time.
Yeah.
So the midfield is Deco, Iniesta, Van Bommel. And then you've taken Van Bommel off for Larsson. So you've got Deco and Iniesta holding, and sort of front four.
Fair to say they were going for it, which is why they
bring on Belletti for Olaguer after 71 minutes.
But that's why that Henri chance was such a kind of psychological blow, I think, for Arsenal, because there were gaps left at the back, and with Henri and Ljungberg, you could exploit.
Well, and Marquez and Puyol are not quick.
No. And as they proved, so Ljungberg has a chance, bit of a tricky one. Then when Henri has that one, and then Arsenal's just the tiredness kind of really seeps in. You know what it's like.
It was a really, really hot, humid night.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
To play against Barcelona.
I remember, we keep talking about him, and I've got another story about him as well. But I remember Ian Hawkey coming out of the mix zone that night, and his shirt was just drenched. Mm. I think he was wearing a pale blue shirt.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the worst colour. Basically, pale blue, pale pink are the worst for sweat.
They are. Although if it's completely covered in sweat, then you could argue that's the colour of it.
Well, it was pretty much like that. It was so hot in that mix zone.
It was really muggy, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, really, really hot and humid.
I know. So yeah, all against Arsenal. I think again that when you realise, hang on a minute, there's like the last 20, last 15, we're 1-0 up. Okay, we're not going to get any more chances. Let's defend. That mental fatigue sets in even more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Barcelona come forward, and it's a delightful pass from Henrik Larsson to split.
Right, Iniesta's pass to start with.
Yes, of course.
Larsson just touches it on for Eto'o.
Yeah,
and you see that pace.
The deftness of touch, though, isn't it? The way he just sees, he knows he's running behind.
Yeah,
and he just has that ability to one, like, turn his foot and flick it and find the space in behind the defence. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Larsson at his best, man.
Yeah, and Eto'o's very much gobbled up the chance. I was like, thank you very much.
an easy chance.
No, not.
A tight angle, but yeah, a brilliant finisher.
Would you look at the keeper for
that?
Yeah,
I would. I really would. Yeah, I would. When I rewatched it back again just before we recorded, I mean, at the time you're thinking, oh my God, you know, it's Eto'o, it's 6 yards out, if that. It's going to be a goal. But the near post on a chance like that, the very basic as a goalkeeper, you've got to have your near post covered. And so he doesn't have it covered. But, it's a powerful shot and he's hit it quick. It's before he's set, I think. So, you know, you can't really argue. And I guess that, you know, the way that the chance was created, it's kind of caught everyone by surprise. The defence is sort of slightly flat-footed. And I think it's, you know, he can take a bit of the blame, but I don't think it's... I think he takes, you know, enough of the blame, but he should have probably had that near post covered.
I think
he probably sees the near post covered and he goes across him, so it could, you know, Eto'o's good enough to do that.
Yeah, but I ask yourself, who would you rather have there, Almunia or Lehmann? Would Lehmann have had a better chance of stopping it?
Yes,
very much so.
Yeah,
Lehmann would have been at his feet before we'd even said, you know, one on one.
He would have conceded another penalty. Probably. Not he didn't concede a penalty. He would have got sent off again. Is what I'm saying. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And at 1-1, really, that was it, wasn't it? I mean, again,
their chances to hang on for 44 minutes for penalties, but
if it was in the last minute to take it to extra time, you think, all right, Arsenal, can you get to penalties? But in the 76th minute, I think it was scored, I remember thinking, they'll be lucky to get to extra time, to be honest with you.
The momentum had shifted, hadn't it?
It had, massively. And then, of course, down the right, you know, Larsson again, lovely little pass to Belletti. I mean, I might even look at the goalkeeper again.
I definitely would. Yeah. I think the goalkeeper's worse on this one.
Yeah.
But it's a brilliant one too. But yeah, for two substitutes, Belletti and Larsson, and yeah, you shouldn't be finishing from that angle.
Nah.
I mean, through his legs ultimately, of course. Yeah. Cannon's off his right thigh, I think.
It's one of those ones where you can't, if it's in that position, if you're set, you can't really get to it. You can't move your feet quick enough. But I mean, Almunia did make a couple of decent saves, you know, to give him a bit of credit. But I do think the two goals he could have done better on.
Do you think the inevitability of that second goal perhaps masks Almunia's mistake a little bit?
Yeah. I suppose so. I mean, the momentum had shifted. I think at some point, if it hadn't been that chance, it would have been another chance.
Well, that's what I mean. The inevitability of it.
I think the dam would have bust at some point in that period. If it hadn't been then, yeah, absolutely.
And the thing, there was no possibility of Barca sort of backing off.
No.
Because the team they had out, they couldn't do anything else but attack.
Oh, they were on the ropes.
Arsenal had no other momentum going forward. It was just, it was there for the taking, basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there it was.
There it was, yeah. And it wasn't to be. And Frank Rijkaard won Barcelona's second European Cup, or Champions League, if you like.
So that night, it takes... I don't know if you've been to that stadium, but you get the train down to the Gardinau, and it's an annoying journey. It's quite a walk to the station, and it was really hot. And so I was with Ian Hawkey, I was with Jonathan Northcroft, who's done one of these, Rob Draper, who I hope we get on at some point. I think there's a couple of other people there. And for some reason, we're desperately hungry. So we're sort of wandering about near the Gardinau looking for something to eat. And this is, I don't know, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., something like that. And we find a 24-hour steak-free place. Brilliant. That's exactly what we want. Mm. Steak-free. Yeah, keep the wine coming. Yeah, brilliant.
This isn't going to end well.
And what I remember is we paid the bill and we sort of said to the waiter, we'd had a fair bit to drink, said to the waiter, where's the nearest cab rank? Where can we get a taxi? And he was like, just get the metro. Well, oh, does metro run through the night? No, sir, it's 8:45 in the morning.
My goodness.
And I'd arranged to meet Philippe Auclair, who's done one of these podcasts. I'd arranged to meet him and a friend of his, and I think his daughter as well, for lunch. So I had to rush back to my hotel. So I'd literally been in my hotel.
Yeah.
I dropped my bag off and gone to the stadium.
Yeah.
I went back, picked my bag up and went to the restaurant to meet Philippe.
My goodness.
Hadn't slept, drank through the night. And I remember getting on the Eurostar, absolutely reeking. And this old woman gets on, sits next to me, and she was either the politest woman in history or had no sense of smell.
Yeah.
And she sort of starts talking to me, and I was really just wanted to sleep.
Yeah.
And says, I'm a sports journalist. And she suddenly starts on about how, I was watching this tennis match on the telly the other day, and I had to turn off before the end, and I got The Guardian the next day, and I couldn't find the result of the tennis match. I don't care. It's got nothing to do with me. Yes, but I couldn't find it. Wouldn't it be useful to have classified? I'm sure it would. I'll mention it. What was the test? I don't know. Shut up!
Oh, Jonathan. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. I think we should end it on that note, quite frankly. An irritating but yet very polite woman on a train. But Gavin, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Not at all. Jonathan, pleasure as always. For more stories like that, do check out theblizzard.co.uk. Of course, we're back next week for another great game from the history of football. Until then, see you later.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.